You're listening to The Blind Chick, an AfterSight original podcast. We're telling you stories about strength, overcoming hurdles, and living experiences. We see who you really are. Blindness can be an adventure. Are you ready for the journey of a lifetime? We are.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Blind Chick. That's Moses Street.
And that's Penn Street, The Blind Chick. And Penn and I, in my fantasy world, were holed up in this little hotel, seedy hotel room that they normally rent by the hour. And we're hiding out just because we don't know if we really should be talking to this next guest. and it's Austin Serafin. Welcome, Austin.
Hi. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And let me tell people the actual reality of why you're on. You're have been doing blind accessibility consultant forever and lifelong technologist. Ham radio enthusiast, which I thought that went out in the 1930s, self-described hacker for good, which I'd be excited to hear about that. And your life story bridges old school Braille, early Apple computers, groundbreaking iPhone accessibility, and unexpected journeys into Eastern mind-body practices, which that's Penn's big one she wants to know about. And community building, which that is huge in our community. So
yeah, so welcome to The Blind Chick, Austin.
Thanks.
And I know you've been blind since birth, but you actually have some pretty vivid memories as a kid. I know there's a story out there about Christmas tree lights and how your family reacted to that when you were little. Can you share that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, I've been blind since birth. I have retinopathy of prematurity. At first, I didn't think I could see any light or anything. That's what they told my parents. No, I'm sorry. First, they said that I could see light, but not color.
Oh, okay.
So that begs the question, is did you just not see color because they told you you couldn't see color?
Well, I mean, I was a really little kid when this happened.
Right.
So they told my parents that I could see light, but not color. And then I remember I was really little and it was Christmas time and we put up the Christmas lights. And I was at my grandparents. And I just started naming off the colors of the lights and all the adults were freaking out. And they were like, what's this one? And I'm like, these adults are so weird. Like, why do they care that I'm like naming the colors of these Christmas tree lights? And they were just like, you know what color that is? I'm like, oh yeah. And so yeah, that's a cool thing to bring up right away. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
so. That's when they realized that I could see color when I actually did it.
That's awesome. So did you keep that vision or has it deteriorated?
I do still have vision. It's probably degraded a little. It hasn't affected my quality of life, though, but I can still see light and color.
Right.
It has to be pretty direct.
Well, I do talk to, and I'm the same way. Like, I love fireworks because if I'm close enough, like, you know, I can actually see. You know, it's not clarity like somebody who has 20/20 vision.
Yes. But I know what you mean. Yeah. If it's like a Roman candle or something.
Yeah, exactly. And then also even Christmas lights. It's one of the reasons. I mean, I like Christmas for a lot of reasons, but it's the same thing. That's why I like in our house, like putting up the Christmas tree early is kind of mandatory. I think that is definitely part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sunlight is also a big deal.
Yes, that's absolutely.
Get sunlight.
And I think a lot of people don't, at least what in my experience, they don't realize that blindness and low vision has like a spectrum and that they're actually, it's way more rare for somebody to be completely and totally blind. Many of us have this spectrum. And also it depends, like, you know, if it's light outside, dark outside, contrast, that kind of thing. So it's neat to get that awareness out there. And also, I know that tech was really important to you growing up, and your family embraced it. What are some of your early memories of when you realized that, wait, tech is going to make my life a little bit easier?
I think my first memory is playing with a radio, like no joke.
Oh.
I was probably like one or so, and I found this box with these buttons and knobs, and I'm like, what is this? And I pressed it, and it went, I think it was a clock radio or something, looking back. And I was just, there's something about it that just drew me to it and intrigued me. And I was like, what is this thing? And so right away, I have that. And I was born in 1977, so this would have been the early 80s. And so the first computer that we got was an Apple IIe.
Yeah.
And it was the first computer that could speak. You had to get a speech card for it.
Right.
Which my parents did. Actually, I should backtrack, because what my parents were doing, they got computers for their business. They got the Unisys computers, which is like a mini, at the time, I guess they would have called it a mini computer, because it would have been the main computer, and then you had the terminals and the offices.
Right.
And so it was a big deal. I mean, you know, now we don't think anything of it.
I know.
This was a big deal that they had computers in the office and they were all connected and they could send messages and do all this stuff. And so they saw where things are headed. And then when we got the Apple IIe, and I think they could see right away that, yeah, this is going to be a big thing for you.
Yeah.
I remember them telling me, you know, one day you're going to be able to read newspapers online, because they were getting headlines, I think, at the time. So they were already getting headlines and stock quotes and things like that. And that's absolutely right. And then I started programming pretty early on, because Apple, the Apple IIe had BASIC built right in. It was really kind of the operating system itself, in a sense. So the BASIC programming language was built right into it. And one day I typed list and started seeing source code, and it went from there. To make this machine, this magic box, do whatever I want.
Right. Just, like, you had control, right? It wasn't just you learning this tool. It was you turning this tool into something that you wanted and needed.
Yeah. And you just give it these instructions, and it just follows the logic and it just follows the instructions. And I was like, this is really cool. So yeah, I've always been in technology. Today I got my new iPhone 17 Pro.
You did.
It just arrived. Like just a few minutes ago.
Wow.
So, I'm still using a walkie-talkie.
No,
I've got those around here also.
Because you're all excited about, justifiably so, the technology, because it's been a massive game changer for the blind. But I'm thinking of a friend of ours, that, like, the battles you would have had going through school, because we have a close friend, and she had been a school teacher and started losing her sight. And the school, if you can believe it, instead of getting her a friggin' computer that she could magnify so she could still read, they fired her. And of course, it went to court, and she, of course, won.
Was that like back in the 80s, like in the same time?
No, this was like 10 years ago.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it doesn't surprise me, because in the 80s, I remember that my parents had to really fight with the school system to let me use a computer in class.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we had the old Keynote laptop, and then, of course, the Braille and Speak from Blazy Engineering.
Right.
And they've revived that now with the BT Speak and the BT Braille, so that's very exciting.
Right.
But yeah, like the Braille and Speak and all of that, like, it was a really big deal to let me use a computer in class. And I, you know, still had to print out my assignments and hand them in. I think one of my Spanish teachers was cool and let me hand them into her on a disc.
Oh, nice.
I know, but, you know, everyone else, like, even to some degree into college, like, you had to print out your assignments. Like,
wow,
it's really wild to think how far we've come so quickly. Now they give computers to kids. I mean,
oh, I know.
Yeah.
Our grandchildren, like, their first day of kindergarten, they got handed an iPad. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's
yeah, yeah,
it it's
I know. My 9-year-old nephew wants to start programming. I'm so happy. So,
and then that leads to the big one that I mentioned in pre-broadcasting is I am not a fan of AI, although I know that some of the things that AI can do, like for medicine and that type of thing, it's like a necessity. But what do you like about AI?
Well, I pre-ordered my Glide AI navigation robot, so that's going to be on its way. And there are different kinds of AI. I think sometimes people might get confused. Mm-hmm. Like, there are large language models, which have become really popular, like ChatGPT and things like that. But there are different AI, like you said, for medical uses, like gene sequencing, things like that. So there are different types of AI. I've been using it. As others have said, you have to be on guard because it'll tell you anything with complete confidence.
Yes.
you have to watch for that. I was shopping for some ham radio equipment and it told me an amp was $749.95. I'm like, that's a really good deal for an amp. And it provided the link to the page and everything. I'm like, wow. No, it was $1,749.95. I'm like, you left out the one, you dumb machine. It's like, thank you for giving me the opportunity to correct my mistake.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
I think that's going to be the end of the earth. Like, it's going to blow up the earth and then be like, sir, thank you for giving me the opportunity to correct my mistake. But no, I don't. I think, but it's doing some, it can do some neat stuff. The smartest minds are working on solving these issues like hallucinations and things like that. Yeah. So we have to, the thing I think about it, because I attended college for computer science in the 90s, the late 90s. And our professor, our AI professor at the time, told us, and these are his words, that AI in its current state had the intelligence of a retarded insect. In other words, it's just following rules. They're very rudimentary.
Yes.
And so that was the state of it. I mean, that's what we were taught. That's what we learned in, 97, 98, 99, that era. And we've gone from that, because it's not linear growth, it's exponential growth.
Right.
We've gone from that to where we are now, where it is really kind of getting like Star Trek, where you can actually have a real conversation.
Yes.
And talk to an AI and it gives you meaningful responses. And
yeah, we interviewed somebody else, and we talked about AI with her, and she's an activist and a policymaker in the disability rights world. And her concern about AI is that it's only as good as what you put in it, right? So if they're not putting in correct information, correct language about the disability world, it's going to spit out the wrong information, and which it's hard enough as it is to educate the world about.
Oh, I know.
And so her concern is that it's just prolonging the ignorance in the general public about disabilities and even policy making, and we've all heard those stories, about a lawyer or somebody, even a policymaker putting it into AI and it just spits it out and they don't do any research. They don't do, any backtracking on it, and they just put it out to the world and it's wrong. Well, if it keeps doing that, people will just, that must be correct. Yeah.
I was reading an FAQ the other day on a company, and I was reading the FAQ and it was like AI generated, check for accuracy. And I'm like, really? Like, oh my God. I see that concern.
Yeah.
My concern too, being into open source and stuff. Yeah. Who called me a hacker for good? I don't think I ever called myself that. That's a good quote. No one ever said that. I'll have to use that. Open source AI.
Yeah.
And to resist the demonization of open source AI. I'm sure they'll try to, and they'll say it's like what hackers and terrorists use or something, their usual stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we have to make sure that we have open source AI and open models and things. I mean, you know, there'll be a place for the proprietary stuff too. But, you know, open source is really important, as with Linux. I mean, Linux started out as someone's open source hobby, and now it basically powers the internet.
Right.
And some of us use it for our desktops as well. And devices like the BT Speak use it. And so, you know, that's something that, because of its open nature, just really got to take off and just go places. So we need to make sure that can happen with AI, and that they don't have policies against it or stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, because that's my biggest gripe is, as a artist, is I'm always like working on new concepts, new visual techniques and all this kind of stuff. And I will come up with something and I'll go, oh, this is really cool. I haven't seen it anywhere. And a month later, there's a filter app
it's AI generator
that can duplicate it. Yeah. And so in the art field, to me, how would you put it? It's frustrating because, yes, I realize that if it wasn't for the computer, if it wasn't for AI, if it wasn't for that type of thing, like the buying community would still be locked in the dark ages, and the blind community is in a renaissance right now where they are, because nobody will hire a blind person. They're becoming entrepreneurs, and because they're brilliant.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to take over the world.
Yeah, they're going to take over the world.
We're everywhere.
Thank you.
Well, I want to.
No, it's.
Go ahead.
It's incredible because, like, when I was a kid, I had a scanner, and it was a big flatbed hooked up to a computer, you know, an 83, 86 or whatever computer. And now you can do it on your phone. I mean, that's incredible that I can read text on my phone.
I know.
I've been trying to diagnose this annoying hum on my property. I went around and found the box and used the phone, and it told me what the box was. And I was like, so I have to call. Okay.
Right.
I was like, this is really neat. Yeah. Like, that's actually really cool.
And I liked your reference to Star Trek, because I do remember that. Like, you'd see these things like on shows like Star Trek, and now they're in the palm of our hands, right?
Yeah. You know? It is stuff,
But, wait, that's a perfect segue into the big question is, because of the sci-fi, for all of us sightlings,
you're sighted.
Okay. Echolocation is just friggin' not possible. And yet I have met dozens and dozens and dozens of blind people that can tap their foot, tap their cane, and describe the room better than I would have.
It's because we pay more attention than you do.
Yeah. So what are your takes on echolocation?
Cool. Yeah. So echolocation is awesome. And first heard about it, a friend of the family who's a doctor let me know about it. He just sent it to me and said, oh, check out these guys.
Yeah.
World Access for the Blind. I think they've changed their name.
I think so. I can't remember what it is, though.
Sorry, guys. What is it now? Yeah, you should definitely have those guys on.
Yeah.
But they're awesome. And I got training from Justin, who I think has changed his name to Sanho. So hello. yeah. And it was real cool. I mean, I started doing some exercises to get ready. And then he came. This was after I moved into the city. I've moved back to the suburbs a few months ago. But right after I moved into the city of Philadelphia in 2012, and we went around, and he went through a whole intensive with me. And just to go through it and be able to start really kind of seeing things like a sighted person, seeing things like in 3D around you.
Yeah.
And being able to find paths and recognize types of objects and things. It's just absolutely incredible.
And they could teach that.
Yes.
And they can teach it. Yeah, absolutely right. Wow. And you can teach it. So yeah, I know. So you can teach a blind person to see. The problem is it completely subverts the O&M system.
Yes, it does.
Because it completely changes the way that you do things, because you start building up maps of places like a sighted person. You start using your echolocation to find pathways and things like that. So it's a whole new way of teaching, because the cane is like your short range vision and the echolocation is like your long range vision.
Yeah.
So you're relying on the echolocation more. But yeah, I hope it takes off. I hope it continues to take off, because it's one of those cool like underground things. And I'm glad you've met dozens of people.
Yeah, I actually got to work. I thought his name was Joel, but I can't remember it's been a number of years ago. I actually hired their team to come in and for a No Barrier Summit experience. And we did have a lot of blind and low vision people there, but we also had a lot of sighted people in the program, and everybody got treated the same. Like, they learned the same skills and everything. And what was amazing is even the people that had 20/20 eyesight felt like their whole world just opened up with this training. Mm. So I think it's something that should be taught to everybody, not just the blind and low vision world. So
yeah, because Evan that you may or may not have been on his podcast.
Oh, yes. Yep. I was on Blind Level Tech. Yeah.
Evan got me going on, like, he walks around the office like a sighted person without a cane. And the office is pretty big. And he got me going on, he goes, everywhere you are, the feels different. I go from the studio room. The studio room feels nothing like the hallway, feels nothing like when it breaks into another room, feels nothing like halfway across that room. And so it's got me going now. Every time I frequently during the day, I will stop just to feel what it feels like to be where I'm standing.
Yeah.
Like your kinesthetic awareness.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I basically had none whatsoever.
Yes. And that's actually, to me, a good segue into, I mean, I think I might be hitting this point where I'm just so burnt out. Like, I've been going 110 miles an hour for just a little bit too long. And I'm trying to find little ways to recenter myself. And I actually started going back to acupuncture, which I used to do that all the time. And I've just gotten really away from the things that I know are my happy place and my healing place. But it's so easy to get wrapped up in this sort of rat race. And I know that happened to you. You know, you were constantly being sought out, you know, for consultant, tech consulting, and even public speaking.
Yeah.
And which, this is where I feel like I'm at my life right now. My health is really kind of fraying. And I can feel it. I mean, I really can feel it. And so I'm hoping I'm catching it before I have complete burnout. But you really made this huge pivot, it seems, in your life to kind of counteract with that sort of rat race lifestyle. I know you got into Qigong and acupuncture yourself.
That's a really good segue, because Qigong are kinesthetic metaphors. The Qigong exercises, one way to think of them, are as kinesthetic metaphors. Mm. So that's actually a very good segue. Speaking of kinesthetic awareness.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. It's been a bit of a pivot for me. So I was doing a lot. As you said, I was doing a lot of consulting and public speaking. I wrote an app. I co-founded Philly Touch Tours. Doing a lot of stuff, a lot of traveling, all kinds of cool stuff, meeting a lot of awesome people, having some good times. But it all caught up to me, and I started getting tremendous eye pain.
Oh, no.
It happened before, but it came back. It's due to band keratopathy, which is a calcium on the cornea.
Yes. I know what that is.
And yeah. And by the way, if anyone out there has retinopathy of prematurity and you're listening to this and you're an adult, please keep getting eye checkups.
Yes.
Because as of 2020, it's considered a lifelong condition. It's no longer neonatal. Mm-hmm. So please get checkups. Because, you know, when I was 18, they were like, oh, you don't need to, you know, have regular eye doctor appointments, which is exactly what you want to hear when you're 18. You're like, oh, yeah. My eyes are indestructible. All right. Yeah. They're not.
No.
So yeah, please keep up with your regular, find a retina specialist in your area who knows ROP.
Yes.
If you can. And please keep up on that for those of you who have it. Because I suddenly was in like serious pain. Like my eyes were just being ripped apart by shards of glass. I had to stop working. I had to stop doing everything. This was in 2017. 2018. And so I went to an eye institute in Philly. And first I went to the retina specialist and then I had to go to the cornea specialist. And they said, well, come back if it gets worse. And I'm like, worse? Like, what are you talking? Like, that wasn't the response I was hoping for, you guys.
No.
Okay.
But this is worse. This is worse.
Yeah.
It's like losing your arm in a thresher machine and they say, come back
out
when
of
it
10.
Gets
yeah.
worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. So I was like, what? And they said, well, there's some surgery, but think about it. We don't really want to do it, but think about it. And I was like, okay, all right. So I didn't know what to do. I was just completely at my wit's end. I didn't know what to do. And so I decided to try acupuncture because I was like, well, why not?
Yeah.
And I started getting results. The first treatment is always weird. She said that because your body doesn't know what to expect.
Right, and it is.
But the second treatment, sure enough, I got this moment of breakthrough. I didn't have any pain at all, just for a moment. And it was enough for my brain to reset itself for a moment. And I was like, whoa. And I was like, how did that work? So we started doing acupuncture at the time twice a week. Now I do once a week. And I also get migraines, which is another thing we can talk about if you want. Which is another thing that's a hereditary thing.
Right,
but anyways,
right.
So I started doing the acupuncture and the herbs. And of course, as an engineer, I wanted to know how this worked.
Yes.
I was like, what is going on here? How did this work?
Yeah.
You know, it reminds me of the first time the West was introduced to acupuncture was when Nixon went to China and he had a whole entourage with him. This was back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And one of the journalists had appendicitis. And so he had to get his appendix removed, right then. Like, you have to treat that, right then.
Right.
So they brought him into the hospital, and they used acupuncture as anesthesia.
Oh,
that was
wow.
the only anesthesia. And they did the surgery and took out his appendix. And the doctor who was there was just like, this is, like, they are way beyond what we're doing here. Like, we can't even explain how they did this. And this was all seen. I mean, they had, you know, everyone was there. So that was the first time that the West kind of saw acupuncture.
I did not know
so
that
to us,
story.
That's awesome. It's this new thing, but to them it's ancient. You know?
Oh, yeah.
To them it's this ancient practice. So I started looking into how acupuncture works. And it took, you know, it did not take me long to find out that there's this thing called Qigong.
Yes.
Which is like the exercise portion. It's like yoga. It's a mind-body system. It's based on the same energy meridians and it complements Qigong. Back, you know, in the old days, you know, you would get acupuncture and maybe herbs, but they would also give you Qigong to do. Mm-hmm. And that's just what you were expected to do. You're expected to do your Qigong to complement the acupuncture and the herbs.
Right.
And the body work. So it's this whole thing. We have this idea in the West now that someone else has to fix us. Like, we're just used to going somewhere and having someone else fix us. So it's kind of weird to think, like, I actually have to do stuff. Like, Qigong is that thing that you do yourself to complement the treatments that you're getting. So I just knew it intuitively. I was like, this is the thing I've been searching for. Like, this is it. This is it. So I started getting Qigong lessons from my first teacher, Iris Kitagawa Rainey. And since then, I've had a number of awesome teachers, a lot of them online. I got really into Taoism, which is the philosophy that's at the foundation of Qigong. Yes. Very essential to get into Taoism, to get the philosophy. And there are internal meditations and things that come with that, internal practices. My Taoism teacher just passed away, sadly. So we're continuing his legacy. Yeah. So, but you know, that kind of brings me to the present, because he wanted us all to be teachers, and it's something I've been wanting to do. So I do plan to start teaching. I'd like to teach the blind, and I'd like to teach teachers to accommodate the blind.
That's what I was going to ask you, because
I think that'd be really powerful.
Because I've done different, like Tai Chi and different practices.
Yep.
And even though I told the teacher, I can't see you, right? Like, can you be more descriptive?
Yeah.
But there, it's almost like they're, that's not part of the practice. Like, the practice is to be more quiet, right? And you're supposed to follow the teacher. Well, if you can't see the teacher, it makes it pretty
difficult. Just get angry and get taken out of it.
Right.
Yeah. No, they'll just say, go like this. Go like this. Put your hand like this. Go like this. And you're like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Yes, that is something I would love to teach to teachers, because there's something, and this really goes back to Philly Touch Tours. You know, it was interesting doing that, because it was such a random thing to get into, doing museum touch tours for the blind. I said this on the tech podcast that there's a Steve Jobs quote I love, that you connect the dots of your life looking backward. Like, it only makes sense looking back.
Yes.
Because, you know, you'll do stuff and it just, at the time, it's like the right thing and it feels like the right thing. And then you're like, why am I doing this? And then later it makes sense. And Philly Touch Tours taught me about multi-sensory learning. The more senses you engage, the better.
Yes.
The more effective the learning. And it also taught us, we were doing tours at the museum, and then we started going around to some other museums in Philadelphia and training them. But we realized, like, we can't do this. Like, we can't be everywhere giving tours at museums all the time. We just can't. Right. It's just, you know, a core group of like three of us and, you know, a bunch of, you know, other people that, you know, can come as they're able. So, you know, it's like, so we realized, we need to teach the teachers. Yes. We need to train the trainers. We need to bring them in to pen and use that as a model. And then they can just take that wherever they go. So that really inspired me also in this. Yeah.
And this is a, how would you put it? A testimony, I guess it would be, because way back when Penn and I were first together, and I did not
when the wheel was invented, right around that time.
Yeah. In fact, we came out to Colorado in a Conestoga wagon.
Yeah.
And, no. But I didn't believe in any of the granola stuff.
And he did not.
Yeah. And we lucked out. And to me, it would be a thing like, if you go to an acupuncturist and you don't get a noticeable result the first one or two times, you want to find another acupuncturist. But we lucked out and found this guy, and there was nothing that guy couldn't fix.
Well, if he couldn't fix it,
he alleviated it.
He alleviated, but he would tell you, like, I was in a really bad hit and run accident, and when I was seeing him, I flight for life and everything. It was pretty crazy. But when I finally got my wits about me and woke up in the hospital, I told Moses, I'm like, you need to get me to Pao, which his name's, he's passed away now, but Pao Huang. I was like, you got to get me to Pao. You got to get me to Pao.
And I had to almost literally carry her into the office. She was almost incapacitated.
He asked Moses what happened, and Moses told him, and he also told him what Western medicine, what they did in the hospital. And And I had like my right arm was in this big, I don't know what it was called, like
a sling,
but all like mm-hmm. bandaged up and real restricted. I couldn't move it or anything. And, but in my face was like, I looked like I had lost the fight with Rocky Balboa, you know, especially because you're in Philly. But we told him what had happened and stuff. And he goes in and they put me on his, and he worked on me for hours.
Yeah.
And he just kind of went from the top of my head to the tips of my toes. And I instantly, I started my, because I also had a pretty traumatic brain injury from the fall from the hit. And, but my brain, I could start, I was thinking clearly again. And like, I knew where I was because I really didn't know where I was. And everything just started. He aligned me, right? He like put me back together. But he said, he goes, your right arm, you've torn every muscle in near the elbow. Like every, like they're all torn, like they're a mess. And we're going to heal them. But it's, you're never not going to be without pain if you overuse it. Oh. Right. And so, and like my left knee, it was the same thing. Like he's like, we will get you to a point that you'll walk again and you will be able to use it and you'll do the things that you love doing, but you are going to have pain because there was just so much damage. And that was what, because, I mean, literally, Moses carrying me in, right? And I had been seeing Pau for years, and I knew what it was. But Moses, like, literally seeing me come back to life in front of him. And when I was done, you know, and he gave me herbs and stuff. And when I literally sat up and walked out of there on my own 2 feet. My brain was completely clear, no residual head injuries. And he told me to throw away the bandages and the splint and everything for my arm. And it really was Moses's aha moment. Like, my God, this,
she walked out and visually you would not have known why is she there? Because there was obviously nothing wrong with her.
Except for my smashed in face. But, but that healed. Right. Like, I even had a facial fracture. And he said, you're going to look like this. You'll probably even get worse, right? Because of bruising. But he did even put Moxie on my bruises and it really didn't get any worse. Like it, from that moment on, it was, everything went back. And I have a gazillion stories I can tell you about Pau, but when he passed away, I was so lost because he really has kept me going over the decades. And so, but now a friend of mine, Karen, I know you're out there, you're a friend of the pod, turned me on to this acupuncturist. And I think I've been like 5 times now. And I'm feeling that already, like, okay, I'm going to be okay. I just need to do what I know, because she'll tell me you need to do ABC. And I'm like, I know I need to do ABC. And if I do ABC, I'll get better. But I also, it's kind of like what you were talking about. It's all these things are intertwined, right? Like Taoism and acupuncture and Qigong and there's even
they're all part of the same system. As an engineer, that's what appeals to me, that they're all part of the same system, so they're all working together. You're staying within the system. I wanted to say I can in a sense relate. You might have me beat. I was in a bad car accident in 1996. I wish I would have known about acupuncture then. Western medicine, the rule I've heard is Western medicine is good for acute conditions and Eastern medicine is good for chronic conditions. Yeah. They did a great job. I was really impressed. I had a fibula-tibula fracture and a collarbone fracture and a skull laceration. So I can, in a sense, relate, but they fixed me right up. They brought me in and put me in a cast and a brace and stapled my head and all.
We still strongly believe in that because if you are in an accident or anything, you know, heart attack, passed out, whatever, you know. No, it's straight to the ER.
Yeah. So I'm not saying this to like reject the one, yeah. But definitely.
But for healing, for the long-term healing, man, I would say go from the ER straight to find a good acupuncturist in advance.
Yep, exactly.
In advance. Yeah.
It's good to know in advance.
But I agree. Just a couple other things. I would get these horrible summer colds during a peak tourist season, and so I could not be sick. I would run into Pal, the acupuncturist. I would walk out an hour later, absolutely no cold system symptoms whatsoever. Wow. Other things he alleviated, our daughter had the curved back, is that scoliosis? Mm-hmm. And we took her in first day, he straightened her back right up. And there was a side thing to that, but her husband had colitis? Ulcerated colitis. And he was literally in danger of maybe not making it at a point, and we started taking him into that guy, and just almost instant, not cure. He couldn't cure it.
But he did get him back on track.
He alleviated it to the point that you'd have no idea there was anything wrong with this kid. Anybody listening out there, find a good acupuncturist and again, if they do not fix the basic the first or second time in, find another one. It's kind of like a therapist.
Yeah.
If you don't get a big aha moment your first visit, it's time for another therapist already.
Yeah, or second visit. Yeah. And also if you're blind, let them show you the needles. Like give a chance to feel the needles, because if you've never done it, you probably have the wrong idea of what the needles are and you think it's scary.
Yeah.
They're not like hypos. They're like these little wires. Yeah.
Well, so my acupuncturist is extremely low vision. She actually went to China to learn how to be an acupuncturist, and she is Chinese. Yes. And she went to learn, and the reason she did, she said, there's a large population in the blind community that trained to be acupuncturists because, really, sight is almost a disability when it comes to things like this. And so she's amazing, but she is funny. There was one time I went and saw her a couple of weeks ago, and I had to race off because we were having dinner with our daughter, and we were in the car racing over, and I went to like put a scarf on or something over my chest. And I was like, oh, wait, what's going on here? And she had accidentally left two of the needles.
That's happened to me.
Yeah, but it was when she told, I didn't know that she was low vision until my first session with her. You know, she doesn't advertise it. She's not, come see me. I'm the blind low vision, you know.
Yeah, right.
So, but when I walked in with my white cane, she was like, oh, are you blind? And I said, yes. And she goes, oh, am I? Mm-hmm. And I was like, yay.
Yes. And you're absolutely right. As soon as I started getting acupuncturists, a few of the acupuncturists there told me, they said, oh, you're blind. Oh, the blinds are revered as healers in Chinese medicine. And when I first heard it, I was like, oh yeah, right, whatever. And then, but enough people told me, and I was like, do you know the story of, there's a famous blind acupuncturist a few hundred years ago. I'm sorry, I forget his name off the top of my head. I could find it.
No, I don't know.
There's a great story. There was a blind acupuncturist. Well, he wanted to be an acupuncturist. He was blind. And he wanted to be an acupuncturist. So he went to a teacher. And his teacher, you know, taught him for time and just said, you know, sorry, kid, you know, you don't have it. You don't, you know. But he said, but, you know, you really want to, and that's great. So I'll tell you what you do. Go to my teacher. And so he sent him to another teacher. I hope I'm telling the story right. And the teacher kind of had the same experience. He taught him, but then after a while said, yeah, you know, sorry. you're just not doing it. But he said, you know, why are you going this retreat? Go on this 21-day retreat in a cave, which is something that they would often do. Yeah. This is a thing.
Yeah.
You know, go on this 21-day retreat in a cave and do this stuff. So he said, okay, good. And so he did. And nothing really happened. He didn't really have like an aha moment during the retreat. He was coming out of the retreat, 21 days in a cave. He tripped over a rock. This is such a blind thing.
Right.
He tripped over a rock and fell. And a pine needle went into his leg.
Oh.
And he cursed and he pulled it out. And he realized that the pine needle went into his leg at a perfect 90-degree angle because the branch was holding it. The needle was coming out of the branch.
Oh.
And so when he fell, it went in at a perfect angle. And he realized that the reason why he was failing was because he needed a guide to guide the needle.
Yeah.
And so he invented the lancet. And acupuncturists still use it. And he became the father of modern acupuncture.
Wow.
So the blind really are tied deeply into this. It's not just something people say. It really is true.
Wow. Yeah.
That we're very much tied into this. There are, I'm sure, plenty of blind Qigong and Tai Chi or Taoist masters, you know.
Oh, and massage massage therapist. Hmm? If you can find a massage therapist, it's probably going to be the best one you find.
Yeah.
Yeah. My teacher told me a funny story that there was a famous, I think it was an herbalist, a blind herbalist. And, you know, back then you'd pay with like silver and gold coins.
Yeah.
And, you know, people would try to trick him, and he always knew. He could always tell the silver from the gold. So, it's recorded that there's definitely a thing. So I want to help bring that back. I think Qigong is such a cool thing. I think, you know, when you're blind, you have a higher level of muscle tension.
Yes.
Speaking of massage, that's just generally true, just in being on guard all the time. So Qigong and practices like it give this opportunity to fully relax while you're moving. Mm-hmm. You're moving, you're in your physical body, but with Qigong, your feet are rooted in the earth most of the time.
Mm.
You might do a step or something, but usually, generally speaking, your feet are rooted. So you're safe in that regard, and you're moving freely, and you're moving through these forms, these different exercises, coordinated with your breath. It's very slow, and it lets you fully relax in your physical body. I think that's why I bounced so into it.
Yeah.
And it's a way for us, you know, I was talking earlier about kinesthetic metaphors. It's a way for us to experience things in our own body that we might not get. I remember, for instance, there's a famous exercise called waving hands like clouds.
Oh.
It's a Qigong exercise. It's also in Tai Chi.
Yeah.
And the first time I learned it was online, and he said, oh, you know, wave your hands like clouds. Like you said, that's basically the only instruction they give because they expect that you're just
blind.
Yes. And I had to stop him. I said, sir, I've been blind since birth. I've never seen clouds moving across the sky.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, my mom made cotton ball clouds. She made some cotton balls and bust them together. She's like, this is what clouds look like. So I kind of know that they're like cotton balls.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I've never seen clouds moving across the sky. You can't just tell me to move my hands like clouds. You got to actually tell me what to do. So it gives us opportunity. If you've never seen clouds moving, you can practice waving hands like clouds. You know, they're the five animal frolics where you imitate the tiger and the deer and the bear and the monkey and the crane. And again, it's like, you know, you can't tell a blind person to move like a tiger or a bear or something. We don't know. We've never touched one of those. You're not going to get close enough for that. So again, you have to describe it firstly using purely mechanical ways, just to describe it purely in terms of physical actions, and then add the breath, and then add the visualization.
Yeah.
There's a method to it, to teaching it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really, especially talking with you today, I'm really going to research and see if there has to be one near in our hometown that teaches Qigong. And that's one of the reasons I really love Tai Chi is that it's, like you said, there's a, you know, you might step a little here and there, but it's just all about relaxing and doing the motions slow and fluid. Yeah. And it's,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, you've been...
Tai Chi, yes. Tai Chi is like a kind of Qigong in a way. It's faster. It has more movement. But yeah, you're in the ballpark.
I'm sure you can find a Qigong slow down a little more, which is
what it is even slower. Yes. So yes, there's a lot of people have heard of Kung Fu, or really it's Gong Fu. It's that same word, G-O-N-G. Qi is the life force, by the way. Qigong is like, like work. It's something cultivated. You can think of it even as like breath work.
Yeah.
Qigong could mean breath work.
Yeah.
But there's Gong Fu, which a lot of people know because it looks good on TV, you know, the fast, hard martial arts. You know? And then there's Qigong, which is super slow, and Tai Chi is in the middle.
Okay. Got it.
So, yes, you're correct. Qigong is even slower. It's slowed down even more. But yes, they're all wonderful practices. And I'm sure you could find someone if you're looking for a personal teacher. Well, and you're right about relaxing. Iris, my in-person teacher, has worked so hard with me to get me to move in smooth, flowing, circular motions instead of jerky, linear motions. When you're blind, it's really something you have to work on. Because there's the symbol of the square within the circle. You might have encountered that. And the square is like the linear part, and the circle is like the flow part. But you have to describe it in linear terms. You have to say, move your arm up, you know, turn your palm out. You know, you have to describe it in these discrete linear instructions. But when you're doing it, that's the circle part. That's the flow.
Yeah.
That's like the wave.
Oh,
wow. So you're, yeah.
Wow. It's, well, we're inspired, and it is maddening because we're running out of time.
No.
I know. Where did the time go? But it's so that you get in the last lick here is what's up next? Online presents, exploring new consulting opportunities, or are you going to be teaching?
Yeah. So I've been moving. I bought a home in December and I moved in February. And, you know, it's been one thing after the next. You know how moving is. So I've been just dealing with one thing after the next, and had to go to my eye appointments, got that done. And one of the technicians, this is so shocking, my goodness, even knew sighted guide and knew to call it a cane in an eye institute. Oh my gosh. I was like, wow, really? And she's like, so, you know, I've been, you know, getting my feet back on the ground here in the suburbs, updating my website, you know, doing all that stuff. But yeah, I'm going to be getting back into, you know, doing some consulting and public speaking and teaching Qigong. I really do want to start doing that and really making that a thing, because it's really something I think that we need. If you're blind or anyone, I mean, you know, all are welcome, but I really want to bring it to the blind because it's something that I think we so need movement. We need to, you need to be moving every day some way.
Yeah, I think that's a super idea, because that's what I was thinking while you were talking, because one of the mannerisms people associate with blindness is that so many are stiff. I want to keep going, but how do people get in touch with you?
Right now, just go to austinserafin.net.
Awesome. And we'll put those in the show notes so you find it.
Great. Well, fantastic. Austin, this has been a really fun show.
Yeah. And what would, I always want to give the guest an opportunity to share, you know, either a moment or inspire, like what would you like to tell the audience out there?
Like, as far as, like, how do you mean?
Yeah.
Something that will change their life forever.
Dun, dun, dun.
Da-da-da-da.
if they're finding, like, with me right now, right? Like, I'm finding myself stretching myself way too thin, and my health is getting affected because of that. Do you have any words of wisdoms, either before people hit that point, or maybe they're at that point right now?
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing that came into my head is spend some time every day meditating. Try to spend some time every day focusing on your breath. You can count the breath, like start, you know, from 1 to 10 and start back at 1. You know, you need a method This is a whole other topic. Meditation doesn't mean emptying your mind of thoughts. It means single-minded awareness, single-pointed awareness. Yeah. So you need a method. So I would, you know, try to, you know, just spend 15 minutes. It doesn't need to be a wild amount of time. Just, you know, set your phone timer 15 minutes and just maybe, you know, sit with a straight spine and count your breaths. Listen to your breath and maybe start with that.
And that's something you can do when you're sitting at your desk or, you know, if you're a student, you could even, you know, go out in the grass, sit down and do it.
Wherever you are. Putting your feet in the earth is a wonderful thing. That's very beneficial to put your feet in the earth.
I know breathing is something that we all have to do, but I think we all take it for such granted that we don't pay attention to it.
Yeah.
And it is when, even with me, when I can get myself just to slow down, and counting is great because it forces your brain to actually pay attention. So that's.
Right. And that's what'll happen. And you'll go off and you'll be like 14, 15. Okay, wait, hold on. No, go back. No praise, no blame. Just go back, you know, acknowledge your thought, come back to one. Just, you know, focus in. There's a region about 3 inches behind your belly button. That's your lower elixir field and Taoism. That's a good place to put your focus.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, just try breathing, even something as simple as, breathe for 15 minutes and just don't do anything else. Turn off your phone, you know, put it in do not disturb. Don't do anything else. Just single pointed, just try to focus on that for 15 minutes a day. See what happens.
I love it. Love it. Well, Austin, you've inspired me today. Keep, you know, that I am back on the right path, but just to be a little more diligent about it. So I really, really appreciate it.
Diligence. Yeah. Diligence is important. Yeah. It's better to do a little bit every day than to be like 3 days on, 4 days on. So yeah, do a little every day. Definitely. I'd love to come back and talk more.
We'd love it. We definitely will have you. Definitely.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. And definitely everybody out there, keep an eye out for Austin's other appearances on AfterSight shows like Blind Level Tech.
That's right. That's right. We did that. And we're going to be doing, I need to book this again. You're a blind sight. Blindsight is all about mental health. You know, I'm going to be talking Qigong there.
Awesome.
Code Orange is about emergency prep. We're going to be getting into ham radio with that. So I'm looking forward to all these appearances. I'm really grateful for AfterSight and everything you guys are doing. It's great.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Such a treat.
I appreciate it.
And everybody out there, make sure you subscribe, share, and then also, you know, send us your questions or just your feedback. If you really enjoyed hearing what Austin had to say, you know, give us your feedback. Where are you in your journey of finding your light again? Reach out to us, you know, feedback at aftersight.org, or you can call us if that's easier. It goes straight to the answering machine. You don't have to talk to a human. I believe you can talk as long as you want. And who knows, if you give us permission, we'll even play it on the air. And that phone number is 720-712-8856. And we always love hearing from you. And everybody out there, remember to be kind to yourself this week and find a way to be kind to somebody else, because it's good for your soul.